Well, I'm very appreciative for the invitation that Don Smith extended to me to come and be with you during his absence. A lot of good memories, tremendously good memories of the time when we lived here. And it's always a blessing to be back with you. And I was thinking about it. I was with this church longer than any other one church in my entire life. And you might wonder how that could be, but I've moved around a lot during my entire life. But I'm thankful for being able to be with you today. Have my granddaughter with me, who's visiting from California, and some of you that know my older son, Paul, it's Paul's daughter, and she's on her way to Europe. And I'm thankful that she stopped by to see me on the trip home. I'm thankful that she can be here with all of you today. I became aware of the fact that this is the 11th of September. And then I thought back, it's been 15 years, hard to believe, since 9/11. And people were made to realize once again that sometimes the world is a scary place. I didn't pick my topic today because this is the 11th of September, but I picked it because I've thought quite a bit lately about the fear that a lot of people seem to feel in life, whether it's because of international conditions and threats from ISIS and other people like that, or whether it's because of things that happen in their own life and crises that if we live long enough, we face some of these one time or another, whether it be a health crisis or a financial crisis, and or the loss of someone very close to us, such as a spouse or a child. And as I said, if we live long enough, we face this. And I think as Christians, we need to give thought oftentimes to the source of our strength and help. And I think there's a message from the book of Habakkuk about this, and so that's why I wanted to talk about this today. We don't know much about Habakkuk, but we do know about when he lived, and it was about 600 B.C., and that's a long time ago, and you say, what's that have to do with me? Where I think we can find a lot of things relevant in his experiences that are relevant to our own. He lived in a time when the little country of Judah, where he lived, was facing a lot of difficulties. And after the good king Josiah died, in a period of 20 years, there were four different kings. None of them did very well. They were put on the throne either by the powerful nation to the south of Egypt or by the Babylonians to the north of them. And Habakkuk describes what the times were like in the first chapter, and he makes a plea to God. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not listen? Or cry to you violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see wrongdoing and look at trouble? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise, and so the law becomes slack, and justice never prevails, and the wicked surround the righteous, and therefore judgment comes forth perverted. So he lived at a time when things just weren't right. And the question he raises is a question like many people today. In the midst of all of these things, where is God? Where is God? And why doesn't God do something about these things? Now, you can quickly outline the book, the short prophecy of Habakkuk in this way. The prophet saw all of these problems, and he wanted to know why God wasn't doing anything about these problems. And so God gave him an answer. He said, well, I am going to do something about it. I'm going to send the Chaldeans, or we would call them the Babylonians. I'm going to send them, and they will punish the country for these sins that they've been guilty of. And they will do some things to make things right. And then Habakkuk said, Lord, they're worse than Judah. How could you possibly use a people like this to accomplish your purpose and to try to make things right? And so he doesn't like God's answer at all. And he's rather stubborn sort of a fellow. And he said, Lord, I'm not going to go anywhere until you give me an answer. Or his words are the ones that were read to us while ago. I'll stand at my watch post and station myself on the rampart, and I'll keep watch to see what he, God, will say to me and what he will answer concerning my complaint. And then the Lord answered me. And we'll look at the answer in just a little bit. My, what boldness to challenge God in this way. But the wonderful thing is that we have a God who lets us raise questions like this. He doesn't just smack us down as soon as we raise questions like this. The wonderful thing is that God dealt with this as he talked to the prophet Habakkuk. And so let's look at the answer that he gave. The Lord answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so that the runner may read it. For there is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks of the end and does not lie. God said, yeah, I have something in mind. And I have a vision about what's going to take place in the future. And he says, if it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Look at the proud. Their spirit's not right in them. But the righteous live by their faith. So the first part of the answer is from God. I have a plan in mind, something that I'm going to do about it. Might take a while, might be a while. Be patient in the meantime. And in the meantime, he says, the righteous will live by their faith. You might recognize this right away as a favorite text of some New Testament writers. Paul used it two times, once in Romans and once in Galatians, to talk about the source of our salvation from sin and how we become righteous, how God makes us righteous, and it's on the basis of faith. And then it's used in a little bit different way in Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and even more like what the message would have been to Habakkuk at this time. And at the very end of the 10th chapter of Hebrews, he talks about the struggles that these people had gone through in past times. And he said, you endured these struggles, verse 32. And he said, sometimes it was abuse, sometimes persecution. Sometimes you were just partners of people that were treated this way. And he said, you had compassion on those in prison, and you cheerfully accepted the plundering of your possessions, knowing that you yourselves possess something better and more lasting. Now he says, don't abandon this confidence that you had in the past. He said, it brings a great reward, for you need endurance so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. Then he quotes from Habakkuk, yet a little while, the one who is coming will come and not delay, but my righteous one will live by faith. So how do you get through this time of persecution? How do you get through this time of difficulty? You do it, if you're among the righteous, among God's people, you do it by faith. This is the way you get through it. And forget about the chapter marking the next chapter, because that's when he said, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And then he talks about a whole lot of people that live by faith. Now we get to the part of the message I think that's really relevant to us. As I said, you don't have to live very long on this earth, before you experience some kinds of very challenging problems. And they can come a lot earlier than you want sometimes. I was 18 years old when my parents were killed, and I suddenly learned that had happened. And so how does a person get through that time? And then could list other things. Any of you could list any number of things that have happened to you during your life where your faith has been challenged. You've lost a loved one. You've had a health crisis. You've been told that maybe something's wrong with you that may bring about your death. And how do you deal with that at the time? And of course, the first part of the answer is this little word, faith. But that's not a complete answer within itself. There are a lot of people today, you know, they'll say, well, you got to have faith. They don't say anything about what you believe in, need to believe in, or whom you need to believe in. Some people just think, well, if you got some kind of faith and if you got some kind of hope, it doesn't matter whether it's real or not. Well, psychologically, that could help for a little while as long as you continued to believe it. But if you found out it was an empty faith and an empty hope, it wouldn't be worth very much. And it's a sad thing for people to get to the end of their lives and find out that everything that they've staked their lives in and what's been fundamental is all a lie. That's a tragic thing to learn at the time. So we need to talk about the content of faith. What is it that we need to believe about God? What kind of God is he? And if we read on in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, he said that he that comes to God must believe that he is, and secondly, believe that he is a rewarder of those who seek after him. So first of all, you know, you've got to really believe that there is a God, and then it's important to understand what kind of God he is. And Habakkuk has something to say about that. And sang this song a minute ago, "The Lord is in his holy temple." And as Adam mentioned, that is a song, these are words that are found in the book of Habakkuk. And it's the end of the second chapter. And when you read it, you might think, well, why? Why does he say that? After all the other things he'd been talking about, he talked about what would happen to those that didn't follow God, that were wicked and evil. And then he said, "The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." Back in the time of the Israelites, when they had a temple on this earth and they wanted God to be with them, where was the place where they thought was most likely that they would find God? And of course, it was in the temple and in what was called the most holy place in the temple, where the Ark of the Covenant was. God was approached in that particular place. Well, that temple is not the one Habakkuk was talking about, because it was to be destroyed a few years later by the Babylonians. And so he wasn't talking here about a physical temple. I think he's talking about where God really abides in heaven. Or from a New Testament standpoint, also God's temple is God's people. If you look in Ephesians, the second chapter, God's people are his temple, and that's where God deals with his people most of all. And so when Habakkuk says the Lord is in his holy temple, he's really saying God is there. God is ready to stand by to help. And to me, it's a reminder then that whatever happens on this earth, God is the one who is still in control. God is the Lord of history. And sometimes, you know, we don't like the direction that things seem to be going here on this earth. maybe in the political realm, maybe among nations, maybe in the lives of other people. And sometimes people get so discouraged they think the whole world's going to pot and ruin and everything's getting worse and worse all the time, and there's no remedy for it all. And it helps me tremendously to remember that no matter what happens on this earth, God is still the Lord of history. God is the one who is still in control. And God is the one who ultimately is going to make all things right. And as we read through our Bibles, we understand that, don't we? I think of one passage toward the end of the third chapter of Acts when it talks about the restoration of all things. And another way to word that, when everything is made right, when all injustices are taken care of. Or in 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, as Paul talks about the resurrection, then he talks about the end. And he said, when the end comes, Christ will have won the final victory, and the last enemy, which is death itself, will be conquered, and God will be all in all. That's the destiny of the world. We live in the interim period, and sometimes the interim period seems a long time. Habakkuk lived in a time when God said he was going to take care of things in Judah by sending the Babylonians, and then eventually the Babylonians would be punished for the kind of people they were, and God would make things right as far as they were concerned. Now, it happened to be 50 years between the time the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem and the Babylonians themselves were conquered by others, and they were no longer the scourge on the earth. A 50-year interim to get along, to survive in. And sometimes when we're in an interim period in a crisis, it seems almost like eternity, doesn't it? Later, we can look back on some of these periods in life and we can say, oh, that didn't last as long as I thought. I wasn't unemployed as long as I thought I was going to be. My illness didn't last as long as I thought it was going to, and so on and so forth. But we need a faith in the kind of God I'm talking about, who's in control and who knows what he's doing and ultimately will make all things right. The other thing that Habakkuk mentions is the kind of God he is. And he said, in the third chapter, after a long rehearsal of things that God had done in the past for his people, he said, "You came forth to save your people." God's interest, God's concern is in his people's well-being, in his people's salvation. God wants the very best for us. And it's not enough to believe just in a powerful God. I need a God who is loving, who cares about me, who cares about his people. And so he's not only able, he is willing and desires to do what is right in our behalf. And the story of the Bible is the story of God's love and concern for his people. And if you read through the Old Testament and you pay attention sometimes in the Psalms, other times when it describes their worship, there is a short song that they sang over and over and over again. And they said, "His love is everlasting. His love is everlasting." He never, never gives up on his people. In the 8th chapter of Romans, Paul says, "God's for us, not against us." And he says a lot of other words of comfort in those verses. And so, no matter what the problems and difficulties are, we need to remember that we not only have a powerful God who is Lord of history, but we also have a God who loves us and who wants the very best for us and who is able to provide it. Now, I'd like to end with the words of Habakkuk after he'd listened to God. And in effect, he goes ahead to say, well, no matter what, No matter how long it takes for God's promise to be fulfilled, he said, I'm going to keep on serving him. And here's the way that he worded it at the end of the third chapter. Though the fig tree does not blossom, and no fruits on the vine, and though the produce of the olive fails, and the fields yield no food, though the flocks cut off from the fold, and there's no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord, and I will exult in the God of my salvation. God, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer and makes me tread upon the heights.